In all the passages where the Buddha describes his awakening, he talks about going through the different levels of jhana first. And once he'd stabilized his mind in good, solid, strong states of concentration, that was when he directed it to insight. And so the insights he got were the way experience looks from the point of view of someone who's in good, strong concentration. That's where all the terms come from. That's where all the ideas and concepts come from. So if you want to understand the ideas, if you want to understand the concepts, you have to put yourself in the same place. That's why we spend so much time working on concentration, to get the mind in the right spot, centered. The image they have, especially the fourth jhana, is bright awareness filling the whole body. And they mention that the breath at that point is still. So the mind is still, centered. The breath is still in the body. The in and out breathing is still. There's still breath energy in the body, but the in and out breathing is calmed down. And you learn to stay there. And the issues that come up in the mind while you're learning to stay there, those are the issues that shaped the Buddha's terminology, the concepts he used, say, about fabrication. What does fabrication look like to somebody who's in good, solid concentration? He talks about three levels of fabrication. There's bodily fabrication, which is the breath, verbal fabrication, which is direct thought and evaluation, and then mental fabrication, feelings and perceptions. As you move the mind through the levels of jhana, direct thought and evaluation get abandoned on the second level. They grow still on that level. And then the bodily fabrication, the in and out breath, that grows still on the fourth. So what you've got left at that point are feelings and perceptions. And these are the big issues. Because as the Buddha pointed out, the feelings are the basis for craving. When the mind is there in the fourth jhana, you can see it very clearly. And the perceptions are what shape your awareness of what you're experiencing. You can see that clearly as well. But there are other passages where he talks about the formless levels. And each of them is based on the fourth jhana. You take that same equanimity, you take that same mindfulness, and you simply change the perception. So when you want to understand about feeling your perception, this is the place to do it. Get the mind really well centered, and then you can watch these things as they affect the mind. You can see where they come from, where they go. You can see their allure. You can see their drawbacks, all the things you're supposed to see are best seen right here. When you're dividing things up before you hit this spot, it's like taking a knife and cutting across the grain. We're cutting things up in whatever ideas you may have. You're not cutting them up from the right perspective. And so many times you misapply the terms. You misunderstand what the Buddha's getting at, because you're not in the same place where he was. It's like taking a guidebook to Paris and then landing in Rome. And you look around Rome and you try to identify all the landmarks in Paris. This is a guidebook without pictures. And you say, well, this must be that. You look at this building, well, that must be the Eiffel Tower, and that building, that must be whatever. But you're looking from the wrong spot. So this is why the practice of good, strong concentration lies at the heart of the path. You're putting yourself in the Buddha's place. And then you want to learn in the same way that the Buddha learned. There's a passage in Richard Feynman where he says, the duty of every generation of scientists is to try to prove or disprove what's been handed down in the tradition. And so it's the same in the practice of the Dharma. We're here to prove or disprove what the Buddha taught. And the way to do it is to follow his method. And this is his method: get the mind centered. In the course of centering the mind, you develop good qualities, mindfulness, alertness, the ability to keep the mind with one frame of reference without slipping off to other frames of reference. That's why mindfulness practice is such an important build-up to concentration practice. And the Buddha also says you have to develop tranquility, your powers of insight. Tranquility is developed by steadying the mind. Insight is developed by looking at this process of fabrication. And as I said, concentration practice is a good place to see it, because you see different levels of fabrication falling away as the mind gets more and more still. And these are the important fabrications. And the fact that trees and mountains are fabricated, that's their business. That's their issue. Our issue is the fabrications that come up in the mind and what they do to us, what we do to them. And so you get the mind centered and you start asking questions. As you go through the process of centering it, you want to ask questions. Why is it that some days you follow a particular set of steps and they lead to one set of results? Why is it the next day they lead to a different set of results? What did you do differently? And then where would you look? Sometimes you have to look at where the mind is to begin with. And then you have to look at exactly how clearly you remember the set of steps and how clearly you are aware of what you're doing right now. How honest are you with yourself? And the Buddha once said that was the prerequisite for all Dharma practice. He says, give me a person who's honest and I'll teach that person the Dharma. And it doesn't mean just being honest with the teacher. It means being honest with yourself about what you're doing, what results you're getting. And then there's the element of improvisation. Because once the mind settles down and you are in this spot of being centered, your awareness filling the body, the breath is still. As the Buddha said, sometimes looking at things in terms of the five aggregates is what provides the important insight. Sometimes it's in terms of the six sense spheres. Sometimes it's in terms of dependent core arising. Sometimes it's in terms of the six elements. You never know beforehand which type of analysis is going to be right for you. You begin to notice as you're meditating which type of analysis you feel more of an affinity for, you feel more of a rapport for, but you've got to test it. You've got to play with these things. Some people don't like the word play because it doesn't sound serious enough, but all intelligence comes from the ability to improvise. If you simply do what's in the books, you're not following the Buddha's method. The Buddha didn't follow what's in the books. He had to use his own powers of ingenuity. And we have the advantage that we're building on the discoveries he made, but we have to go back and we have to make those same discoveries ourselves. We have to use the same method he used. And one element in that method is this ability to improvise. Again, Richard Feynman was reading a British physicist who said he went to study with him in Cornell, and he was amazed at how, on the one hand, how brilliant he was in physics, but also how playful he was. And he realized after a while that the two were connected. If you don't learn to play around with ideas, you don't see new things. If you don't learn to play around with what's happening in the mind, you don't make any discoveries. The Buddha was the type of person who made discoveries. You have to make yourself the type of person who makes discoveries, even if it's simply to reconfirm what he discovered. You have to go through the same process. Really testing things. As John Mahabua would often say, try to prove the Buddha wrong. Because it's only then you can be sure that you've really proved what he taught. Otherwise, there's always a possibility that you're simply programming the mind to think in a certain way. And you can see, now thinking in a certain way, that must be awakening. That's not the case. You can't clone awakening. It's always an unexpected discovery when it comes. Never comes quite the way you conceive that it would. So even though the Buddha gave us his discoveries, and they've been passed down for all these generations, we have to keep reproving them for ourselves. Because what we're doing basically is checking our understanding of what he had to say. All of our discoveries are in words. We can look up in the dictionary. We can understand the words. But we're coming from ignorance. So we're never going to be quite sure that we really understand what he had to say. If we really understood, things would open up. There'd be awakening. The fact that there's not yet awakening means we don't yet understand. So we have to keep testing things, trying new approaches to figure out where we're still ignorant, where our blind spots still are. If you don't improvise, if you don't play, you don't see. The intelligence of a new discovery just doesn't happen. So the important thing here is the method. And the heart of the method is how to get the mind centered in such a way that it's both still and alert. Awareness all around. Everything very still. And see what the movements of the mind look like from that perspective. See how you can experiment with them from that perspective, asking the kinds of questions the Buddha recommends. He says, watch things arise, watch things pass away. Look for what their allure is, what makes them attractive. Look for their drawbacks. Look for their escape from them. The release from them. He was confident enough in his method that he always told his students, test it. Don't take what I say just on my own word. Test it for yourselves. So when you're testing it, make sure you've got the method right. And see if you can prove for yourself whether what the Buddha said was true, that there really is a deathless element. And you really can achieve it through your own efforts.